creating cultural awareness and understanding. This is Culture Click. Culture Click is written and produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University.
On this episode of Culture Click, we join Dr. Elizabeth Onis of Winona State University's English Department as she gives her presentation, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Farm. You will learn how Elizabeth and her husband Chad purchased a farm and rebuilt it literally from the ground up. In a story that sounds like the plot from The Money Pit, Elizabeth tells us about the trials and triumphs of creating a new space with green efforts, like using building materials that do not off-gas, utilizing metal-clad wiring in the bedrooms, and non-toxic insulation. We'll also learn how the land utilizes biodynamic farming and what that exactly means. I'm Terry Tunset, inviting you to join us today on Culture Click.
Hi, folks. It's nice to see some of you, and some of you, of course, I know from various other parts of my life. I feel as if I have spent probably more than half of my life with my husband, Chad, which has been almost 20 years now, looking for a place to live. More than half, maybe three quarters of that time on the road, looking at yet another place that, as Chad would say, goats wouldn't live here. We have walked into farmhouses where by now, of course, Chad will ask realtors if Jesus is holding the house up. He walks under the floors and goes, whoa! And, you know, the realtors cringe as he, you know, rolls things down the floors. We've moved a lot. And the first time that we moved outside of town to a house outside of Stockton, we were desperate to get out of town and desperate to get away from our neighbors. We seem to have neighbor karma. People have many kinds of difficulties in life. We seem to have neighbor difficulties. And we found shortly after buying that place, which was only on a few acres of land, that we were living kind of in a funneled valley down from a gun club, which we heard resounding. And so, yes, we spent quite a long time working on a place that we knew we would be leaving almost as soon as we bought. So, I think I said to Ruth Charles one day, who teaches here, I came into school, I said, I think we found a place. It's really appalling. So, this was the tidy, clean barn. You know what rural poverty looks like, right? This was that. This is what you do on a professor's salary, okay? The biblical intonations here are intentional. The bathroom wasn't really too bad. You can't really quite see how dark purple this is, but this was like one of those Betty Crocker cakes, you know, with the swirly icing, really thick. This was part of the kitchen where the sink, none of the pipes were buried deeply enough, so every spring, apparently, everything froze, septic system included. So what my husband said to me about all of this, and I'll tell you a story about that door in a moment, is he said, you know, if we get this place, everything's gonna have to come out. And I said, okay, all right, yeah, okay. And, you know, like so many things, you think you know what that means, but you don't really know what that means. There were a few nice little things that I'd hoped that we could salvage, but no, we couldn't. When Chad said that everything would have to come out, I'm afraid that's really what he meant. And so we took this house down to the studs, basically, and didn't even leave the old joists. Just don't worry, this whole thing isn't going to be all about home renovation. It would be like the antithesis of a travel thing, right? You don't really want to hear about someone's lovely vacation in Italy. You don't really want this all to be about home renovation, right? But this is what we did. And when I say we, I mean my husband, Chad, who is stronger than I am and very capable. And he would tell you he doesn't have the skills for a renovation like this, although obviously he did. Myself, who has very little muscle and less patience, but will say that. And our 12-year-old son, Jensen, who was not in favor of any of this at all, as you could imagine. But we ripped all of this stuff out ourselves, and I spent, you know, months, of course, shoveling stuff into really huge garbage bags. I learned some things. You can probably read this, right? Physical work teaches you that things that seem impossible are not, but it helps to be partnered with someone who is more capable than you are. We did actually have friends come look at the place for us. Some of you know Emily Falk, who teaches here. Emily's husband, Jay, is really capable, and Jay came to look at the house for us and said, "You won't know what you got till you get in there," which we knew. And another friend of ours who's a contractor looked at it and said, "Tear it down. Just rip the whole thing down." But the house had a steel roof. It had a steel roof on basically what was a soggy cardboard box of a structure. So we decided to save the roof and to do it all ourselves. Here's what we hired: electrician, although Chad strung a lot of electricity, a plumber, because we're smart enough to know that no matter how smart you think you are, plumbers know way more, right? And we hired the Amish to do steel siding and the drywall. The drywall looks like hell in places, but you know, oh well. Things don't have to be perfect. There's a lot of talk about green stuff these days, and one of the marital refrains of our marriage during this time was me saying, but wait, as Chad wanted to get something done. And he's with me on all of this stuff, but there's a degree to which common sense really can guide you. So the old insulation, nicely laced with squirrel poop and old newspapers from 18-something, didn't save the insulation, right? We were careful about pulling out certain boards, guessed that there was wood, lead paint on them, and I wore one of those dinosaur-like masks, you know, with all the stuff, because I didn't want to breathe anything that could be bad. Reusing a lot of things that you can, wood can be salvaged. Jensen spent months, literally months, pulling nails out of boards, half-willingly. What we chose that was new was we were careful to choose things that weren't toxic. And we tried to consider the environmental impact of what we were using. So for instance, I wanted steel siding on the house because vinyl, God forbid your house catches fire, is really toxic, right? Probably both aren't so great in the making of them, but steel a little bit better. And so these were just some of the things that we did. We used tile instead of linoleum. I would have to admit, and a friend of mine says it in much more salty language, low or no VOC paint that's green and doesn't off-gas, it gets pretty dirty. It doesn't hold up as well. But we used materials made by Safecoat, which is a company that makes things that don't have off-gassing. Cork floors, not cork floors from Menards. Sorry if someone works at Menards. But not cheap cork floors, but ones that, again, are made with good materials. Metal-clad wiring in the bedroom so you're not sleeping with metal circulating, the electricity circulating, that the circuits aren't going the whole time, and insulation that didn't have formaldehyde. And then we started to put it back together. But obviously we weren't living in the house at this time, but to give you an idea, for those of you who were here at the time, the year that we bought this place was the spring before the flood. So we were living outside Stockton, Minnesota, which was hit very hard by the flood. This house, we lost only our driveway, but people died, less than a mile down the road. But it made getting from one place to another even more difficult. So if you can imagine, on top of doing a renovation like this, there was packing food for a day because there was no electricity or running water there, and potable water and all of that, and then going to do work and driving home among roads that were out, it made a long drive longer. It was a really hard year. One of the only things that we actually kept in the house was this pine floor in the bedroom because it was nice. The previous owner of this house, having more enthusiasm than capability, if you look back behind where that ladder is, there wasn't room for her to fit a refrigerator in the house, so she just knocked the back wall out and put the back of the fridge on bricks. That, combined with a wall that a cat had been using as a litter box for a long time, was probably one of the low points in our demolition prospect. And I mentioned pipes freezing earlier. Almost all of our decisions were made based on economy. And Chad said we should put the sink here because we can run the pipes underneath the house. They'll be less likely to freeze and we'll insulate them properly. And counters from Menards, aside from the fact that I didn't want all the particle board and that kind of stuff, which wouldn't have been green for the sake of green, but I just, if you're really remodeling something altogether, the more crap that you have, the more crap that you have. And so we kind of went bare bones and Chad made countertops. You can see the Safe Coat bottles there, which we still live with. I'm really not kidding about this. I learned to use a lot of different tools imperfectly. Saws scare me a little bit, you know, the really big saws. I push stuff through and do that. A random orbital sander is about the worst, but a shop vac is pretty good. It took about a year to get the house like this. And when I say a year of work, because our animals were down there, I mean every single day. Every single day, rain, snow, hail, cold, feel like it, not, we went down to work. Now, I was still teaching here at WSU. We started in April. I was relieved to come back to my job here in September. I had the easy part. And some days after school, I would make the big triangle. I would drive, I've driven from Stockton to here to work, and then from here out to Houston to work for a few hours on the house, and then from Houston back to Stockton and make dinner, and then do some prep and fall into bed and do that all over again. It was really hard, but I think that one of the things I'd like to think that our kid learned, I'm sure it's the thing that he'll complain about in therapy 10 years from now, will be that you things that you really don't think that you can do, you can do. You can do. It just was a lot of work. So you would really think that having come through that, that that would be sufficient. I should say, you know, for those of you who have been partnered with someone for a while or not, that, you know, Chad and I did our PhDs together and had a child on purpose during the PhD program and took our comps at the same time. And it was really difficult, but I can't tell you how many contractors consulted with us and kind of said as we were thinking about various things, "You two want to stay married, don't you?" We've done two houses together, but this was either, you know, the straw that didn't break the camel's back, but it was another piece of the puzzle. The barn that was on the property. We were actually at the closing and still didn't have insurance on the place. And I, who tend to be a very tidy person, was cavalier, saying, "None of it's worth anything anyway. It doesn't matter if it burns down." And the seller's lawyer said to me, "You really should have insurance before you walk out this door." And so I was on the phone in the closing with the seller's insurance agency. We just want to pick this place up. But the barn was the reason that we couldn't get this house insured. We spent a year, that year of working on the house, trying to figure out if we could save this barn. And what you can't quite see, but more towards the middle here, the stonework, someone had once done beautiful stonework on this barn. The windows had beveled edges to them. I mean, care was taken, but the land had eroded around it so bad and the walls were caving in. And you can see the roof of the barn, it was totally gone, although someone had stored a couple tons of hay in it. I will save you my diatribe about the witlessness of the person who stored hay on the floor in bales and then let donkeys live for a couple years on top of it, so that by the time it came to actually get that mess out of the barn, you know, we're talking about getting through this much of old hay and manure. It was months and months with, I'm no good with a mattock, but you know, I mean, just picking away at it, it was very difficult. So we finally decided to take the barn down, that it wasn't salvageable. And we did ask for advice before we did it. It looked like a good idea. There was a tree actually growing inside that silo. We thought about it a lot. But what we did was, there wasn't much that was toxic in the barn. We pulled off a lot of the tar shingles. You can see up on the top, that's all wood, so that could be burnt. But I crawled around on the top of the other side of the roof and pulled off all the old tar shingles, all the old electrical wire, and then we had someone come in with a backhoe. One of the things that I've learned about being out in the country as opposed to being in an academic environment is that it's really easy to presuppose things about how people work. I was really nervous about this idea of burning the barn down, and the guys who knocked this down were really careful and really smart. They knew just what they're doing. The one thing that we wanted to save was a water hydrant because we wanted to put it in the next barn. And this guy, Terry Seacamp, who did a lot of the demolition work, he managed to take down the entire barn working around, you know, like a little hand pump like this. It was unbelievable. We saved all of this stone. It's still in a pile at our house. A lot of the old cement was carted away. Part of the people who took it down wanted to save it for fill after the flood. And then the rest was knocked down. Taking this down was really dangerous and work. And we thought about doing it ourselves. And I was a little too nervous about Chad climbing up there to undo those things. A lot of those staves surround garden beds now. As you can see, the tree has been exposed. But see this little red hydrant right in the middle of it? He managed to pull this whole thing down without knocking that thing over and giving us a gusher, which is really pretty amazing. It was a really long few days of just feeling nervous that you'd end up setting the house on fire after having done all that work on it. And things then got pushed down. You get all your permits to do this. I can't tell you how many people said, you don't need to worry about a permit. I said, I think maybe, yeah. So we got rid of that, and that made things feel a little bit better. This is a question we asked ourselves, but the second thing, only half. We really did want to live out in the country. We wanted a little more room, but I'll give you some reasons why it was worth doing this, or you can see for yourself. We like sheep. We don't have any right now, but we kept them for a number of years. If you have sheep, you have to have herding dogs. And that was an excuse. We needed a place for the horses. And of course, more room means room for more horses. Chad doesn't always agree. Chad likes chickens. I don't really care about chickens, but I'll talk about a biodynamic farm in a minute. Chad likes cows, too. One of the trump lines in our marriage has been, one that Chad is the one usually to exercise, is, but I've always wanted. But the things that he's always wanted seem somewhat new to me. The Jersey cow is not really a new thing, but he had always wanted cows, or so he said. And finally, of course, he was able. The garden is an important part of what we do as well. There are things that are fun and not just work. Biodynamic farming. This idea was founded by Rudolf Steiner, who is also the person who was the founding person behind the idea of Waldorf schools. He was a highly trained scientist and philosopher, and long before many of his contemporaries, Steiner believed that Western civilization would increasingly bring destruction to itself and the earth if it did not begin to incorporate an objective understanding of the spiritual world and its interrelationship with the physical world. Now, biodynamic farming is something that people have really, I would say, diverging views about. Organic farming is, you know, however much you want to debate the label of how organic something is, you know, clearly, fewer pesticides, better for you, better for the soil. It'd be very hard to argue against that. Biodynamic farming is something that I'm not always even sure I believe in. Chad really believes. But I think of biodynamic farming a little bit like homeopathy for the earth, right? And if you look at our place, it was weedy and barren and a mess when we got there, and it's really become improved. Biodynamic farmers make certain preparations that get put into, I'll show you a certain kind of manure pit that we have in the garden. There's a whole philosophy behind it, and some of these potions need to be stirred 100 times in a vortex. It's all, to me, whether I'm in a mode where I feel like believing in it or not, it's a kind of interesting way of thinking about things. And I do have to say this. According to biodynamic farming, there are certain days based on not astrology, not like what sign are you Virgo, but based on the lunar calendar that dictates when you plant fruit, leaf, root. I've looked at a lot of these texts that shows, you know, like carrots planted on a flower day, and the carrots all have, you know, like they're bifurcated and they didn't come out quite the right way. And so in a way, some of the biodynamic principles help me keep my growing calendar straight. I plant roots on root days. I plant potatoes on root days. You know, I follow it and I see. But I think that it's a kind of interesting way to think about life on a farm beyond just, oh, isn't this nice? Isn't this pretty? It's reclaiming the soil to a degree. Even people who are biodynamic farmers who don't eat meat often keep livestock, because on a biodynamic farm, livestock are really essential to the ecosystem of the place. One of the things you learn if you have a farm is that different people like different things. Myself, don't like the chickens so much. They poop indiscriminately, as if the horses don't, right? And I don't know, they scratch up things that are inconvenient for me and that kind of thing. But I try not to complain too much. I don't always hold to it. Because the fact is that they're really useful for keeping, say, flies down in the summer. I pick up after the horses and all of that gets composted, but the cows, you know, it's kind of hard to pick up cow flop. The chickens scratch all of that up. They take larvae out of it. And so around the barn and the immediate environment of that in the summertime when flies are really bad in other places, it's quiet in my barn. I can get horses tacked up and all of that without any fuss. Plus, of course, you know, if you like eggs and you like chicken soup, chickens have other uses. Chad does a lot of our butchering, although times he's, you know, farmed it out to someone because he's been too busy. This little structure that Chad made is a chicken tractor, and this isn't his idea. There's a book called Chicken Tractor, and he tells people to go get it. But basically what happens is if you leave the chickens in the chicken tractor, you feed them, of course, and water them, and I can tell we must have chicks in there because there's cardboard at the sides. There's chicken wire around it, but it must be keeping the little ones in and a heat lamp. It makes a great garden bed, and still, even with the garden beds that we made a couple years ago, I can tell the soil is much lighter and fluffier and more loamy because it was all scratched up by the chickens. And you can move the tractors so that they end up, I mean, you can see our garden beds, they're partly made from recovered timber, but from the barn, and you see the staves around the bottom of the chicken tractor that we have there. But we just keep moving the chicken tractors around the garden and making new beds. And it's been really useful for the soil. Mostly the chickens just wander around and get underfoot. And they follow you everywhere. Because once you start feeding them, you can hardly walk. You're laughing. Have you had chickens? No? Yeah, yeah, and I curse at them and I call them names, and you know, Chad is much more tender with them. You know, they do a good job for what they do. We practice rotational planting so that we make sure, you know, where we have corn, you know, there's sunflowers in another picture, and we vary them so that we avoid pests. This year, I guess it's safe for me to say this, I'm superstitious, you know, no potato bugs. I move them, and I've still got potatoes in the ground. I've got to finish harvesting things, but, you know, we have very little problem with any of that. This says sheep can improve poor soil or steep slopes through their hooves providing aeration in their manure, which is small and pelleted. You know how you see people that work on lawns, you know, running those little things to provide aeration? Sheep's feet do that. And if you don't overgraze and you don't put too many together for too long, it really can be restorative for the land. So this slope was really bare when we got this place and filled with leaves. I meant weeds. Sheep will also, when it's small, eat burdock. So those really annoying burrs. When you drive by a place and you see horses and their tails are totally matted with burdock, yuck, right? This can take care of that. How many of you were here when Michael Pollan was here? Some of you were? He talks in The Omnivore's Dilemma. He said, if you really want to know what someone is about with farming, look at their bookshelf. Gene Logsdon, who wrote All Flesh is Grass, also The Contrary Farmer, is someone who's really been important for kind of the whole organic and sustainable movement. His title comes from Isaiah, All Flesh is Grass. But in the biblical look back at this quote, Isaiah really seems to be talking about our impermanence, okay? Logsdon is talking about something different. He's talking about raising meat, about raising livestock. And when he says, all flesh is grass, it's of course a nod back to the Bible, but also the fact that really, I don't need to go down this whole trail because most of you know it, but you know, cows, sheep, grazing animals are meant to graze. They're not meant to eat sawdust or other weird things that aren't real food, right? So all our animals graze. This is the first dog that we got. She's an Australian Shepherd, Dare. And we really wanted an Australian Shepherd. And after we got her, we found out that the kind of sheep that we had, Clun Forest sheep, were pretty resistant to herding and that a dog like an Aussie really is not optimal. So, oh well. She's cuddly. She bops. And people who are experienced about this will say, oh yeah, Alcies, yeah, they hop up and down. You're like, yeah. She actually has been useful though. A few times in a tight spot, she's gotten things moving when she needed to. We bought a border collie. I shouldn't say we. Chad bought a border collie, Lucy. And anyone who's been to our house knows that probably the number of people in the world that my husband loves as much as he loves this dog are very small. Herding dogs ache to do what it is that they're bred to do. Of course you have to train them, but you know, one of the things that I kind of wanted to say in this talk is that Chad and I both are really not expert at any of the things that I'm talking to you about. I really only started gardening a few years ago, and I read the back of the seed packet and I put the seeds in the ground and I try to remember to water. And I weed when it's too wet to ride my horses. But we grow a lot of food. You really don't have to be that knowledgeable or much of a perfectionist to get things done. And Chad went to some herding dog clinics with Lucy, but she comes around and he'll go into a pasture with a crook, but you know, the sheep, they're skittish. They'll tend to go away from you. She didn't have to be trained to jump over a fence like this. Kathy's nodding like, have you seen dogs do this before? They are. It kind of almost breaks your heart to watch them because she would do this all day long. And when I say that, I'm really not exaggerating. You could stand out there for 40 minutes and say, up, up. She'd go over. The little one behind her can't do it yet, but I just was trying to snap these pictures in the air. But she really is adept. You know, you tell her to walk up and she's got her eye on them. It's hard sometimes to correct them from being too aggressive. Like, you know, sometimes you've got to tell them to lay back. She caught a lamb once and ripped its back leg a little bit. And it was a Sunday night. There was no one around. Chad stitched up the lamb on a picnic table with me holding the lamb. You learn to do these things because, you know, what else are you going to do? There's no one around. The lamb was fine, actually. I mean, he didn't like it, but it worked. So, but you could see she's ignoring the horses. She doesn't care. She knows they'll kick her, actually, if she fusses at them too much. But she, you know, she knows a way to me and come by. And there was a period when my husband, she's behind the round bend here, was traveling a bit, and I had to get the sheep in who were loose. You're laughing. Are you laughing because you know Chad or because you can just imagine? Yeah, yeah. I was the one that wrote this. And Lucy helped me get the sheep in really without me even knowing what I was doing. You know, I held up a section of fence and I took Chad's crook and I called out what I thought would work and she got him back in. They're pretty stunning. So my husband's kind of a maximalist and I'm always kind of trying to keep control over things. The one exception to this in our later married life has been with the horses, and which case Chad kind of created a monster because he thought I might be a little less neurotic if I had something else to think about other than writing books. And so he was the one who encouraged me. Maybe you should get a pony again. And I had done this. This was all I did practically up to the time I was 18. Well, you know, it started and, you know, like people joke, and it's not very charitable. People joke about men having midlife crises and sports cars and stuff like that. Forget it. Women, those horse crazy girls, once they get to be old enough and they have their own credit cards and checkbook, you're a mistake to ever encourage that because it's a, oh boy, it's bad. But Chad is given to bringing animals home. I was so pissed, but then look at that face, right? She's a border collie as well. This is Jammer. She's our third dog. I mean, three is as much as any sane person could have, right? And a few weeks after we got her, Chad said, you know, she's a valuable dog. We could sell her if you want. And I started to cry. And, you know, so that was that. So Jammer is very firmly part of the herd. Jensen has grown by this point, as you can see. Anyone in this room, if you own a car, you can go to a CAFO and you can get a cow. You can put it in the back of your car for $10. No questions asked. Sad to say, but true, a bull calf. And Chad saw a woman with like five cows in the back of her car one time. He's like, we should just go get it. So this is one way that we manage our milking and our cows. This was one of my things. I said, we shouldn't name the calves if we're going to be eating them. So all the calves are named Morris. We're up to about Morris 3 and 4 now. But this is Rosa, and she's much fatter now. We have a milk cow. Basically, what happens is we leave the cows on Rosa, or the calves on her, when we don't feel like milking. And Chad separates her from the calves for a day when he wants to milk that night. But we have three other families that are milking Rosa, so she's providing milk for four families. And it's nice. We get to see people. It's fun. Things just grow. This is a spinach thing I started. This is the spinach this fall. That's what my beds look like. You can really plant stuff late. And chard thrives in cool weather. I used to really get fussed when I felt like we hadn't done something well and it didn't come out right. But I've learned that, you know, the weather will trump you, so you might as well just relax, right? We did all this garlic and it didn't keep particularly well, but we had enough to get us through. I seem to spend most of my life with something in my pocket, plastic bags tucked into my pockets for one thing or another. I put this winter slide in here because this is probably March, but that's spinach in there. If you leave your fall spinach, you know, you harvest as much as you want and then you cover it in plastic, you go out to the garden in mid or late March and you can pull up all that plastic and you've got green weeks ahead of things. It's amazing. The chard doesn't work quite as well. I thought it would, but it didn't really. This is one of the biodynamic pits. It's got manure in it of a lactating cow. See, it all starts to sound a little bit like dancing around the, you know, something at midnight. But and it's got some different preparations in it. And Chad got it all set, and then you cover it up for a season. And I can point you towards more resources if you'd like to know about biodynamic farming. There are people right here in Winona that know a lot more than I do, but they're all interesting folks to talk to. We have some grapes that were planted by a previous owner, so we have a lot of grapes. We have our animals tossed in various configurations. These little white fences are really sheep netting, and we don't leave the animals out in this when we're gone because they could escape too easily. But it works for saving on your lawn mowing, right? This pony Logan, Chad and I actually used to till a field. He was terrific. I wish I could say the credit was to my training, but he's bred to do this and really liked to be driven. And I even got Jensen to take a few turns before he got a little too Ben-Hur. Driving a team is hard to do, and we had help with this. You got to know what you're doing to hitch them up correctly and to get them practicing as a team. And I didn't want to make this all about horses, which I could say way too much about, but we had some help here. We're at another person's farm, and we got them driving as a team just really well. You know, the milk that we have from the cows, I've gotten used to drinking it. You get used to having milk that's fresh. There's a lot of chores. But, you know, one of the things I'd say about my life is that we spend a lot of time thinking of the next thing to do, or as I showed you, sitting on the picnic bench and saying, I'm too tired to think of anything else to do. We make a lot of pickles. Putting up food is a subject for a whole other presentation. But, you know, we've really enjoyed this place, and we continue to enjoy it. I feel lucky to have found it, and lucky for the work of it, although I wouldn't have thought that at the time. I cursed it at the time, but I, you know, I've found over the year that I've settled in, and it certainly does make it a bit more like home. It really was a lot of work, but I don't think I could have learned some of the things I had learned any other way. So, questions? Stuff you want to ask?
The comment was made, it doesn't seem like it took that long to complete this project.
Denny Rehm, who, do you know Denny? I have a lot of respect for Denny, and Denny is a great problem solver and really knows a lot. He looked at the place, he said, oh man, no way. He was the one who said, tear it down. And Chad said, no, we're going to get in a year. And Denny said, no one can work harder than Chad when he really puts his head down and has to work. It was hard, though. It was hard. There were a few days that we went out there and, I mean, we tended to the animals and we just said, I can't do this today. And then we sat down under a tree, especially in the real heat. You know, no air conditioning, no electricity.
The question was asked, outside of your experience with horses, had either of you had experience raising sheep, cows, or chickens?
And you know, this is another thing where, you know, really in any other situation, this would be like, oh, the befuddled academics, you know, it's funny. Chad is really good at reading something, actually understanding how to apply it and thinking through the many things that could go wrong before he puts that into action. And so, you know, we've managed to do a lot of this stuff without too many missteps. But, you know, some of the same things that I tell students about source work is the same thing I kind of apply to us, which is, you know, like consider the source of your information, ask for advice, and then think about where that advice is coming from, you know. But I think having horses in for me, I mean, you have to kind of know something about horses, and I really did do this up till the time I was 18 a lot. But, you know, we're living surrounded by farmers, and a lot of them organic farmers that are smart people, and so there's always people to kind of go to and ask for advice.
The comment was made that it's pretty remarkable that Dr. Onus and her husband were able to rebuild a home, but that it's not uncommon.
And well, the thing too is that, you know, if you're doing something yourself, it doesn't go that quickly. So you have a lot of time to think about it as you're doing it. I was found as a kid, you know, in home ec, sewing scared me because once you cut something out, the fabric was cut. Or once you sewed something, if you went to go rip it out, it would show. Whereas, you know, I can't tell you how many times, oh, I can't even say this, even if this weren't on the radio, that pink polystyrene that doesn't off-gas. When Chad had said to me about a previous remodel, there is not a square angle in here. I thought, yeah, I know, it's hard. But when I was the one that was cutting that stuff and the joist measured, 20 inches at the top and 23 at the bottom, and you're trying to cut something in a big saw, oh my God, the cursing. The students sometimes will apologize to me, and I'm thinking, you have no idea what I sound like at home. Yeah, it's hard, but the time is on your side in that way, Other questions or stuff you want to ask?
People were curious about what is done with the manure, how long it can sit for, and how long it's useful for.
And that's one of the reasons why you have to have livestock is because, all that manure, I didn't bother to take pictures of this because it's not pretty, but, all winter I'm out there, I'm picking up after the horses, and we put it all in pallets, like pallets that you'd see that use a forklift, and we stack it all up so that it's all settling in, and I keep piling it on, and then in summer we put it all in a manure spreader and move it up to a compost heap and up in the corner of the property, and it really has time to settle and become soft earth. But by the time that we've put it on the garden, it might be 2 or 3 years old even, so it's really had a time to break down and all that sort of stuff. It's a lot of work, but what else would you do with it? You'd pay someone to take it away, It's what people do. People do at stables. They'll, hire someone to come take stuff, but to Chad, it's a resource. Well, I don't want to keep you. Thanks a lot for coming. It was fun to put this together. Okay.
Thanks again to Dr. Elizabeth Onis from Winona State University's Department of English for sharing with us her presentation, A Funny Thing Happened, on the Way to the Farm. Dr. Onis can be reached at eoness@winona.edu. I'm Terry Tunsett, and you've been listening to Culture Click.
Creating cultural awareness and understanding. You've been listening to Culture Click. Support for Culture Click is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Culture Click is produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University. For more information, look us up on the web at kqal.org. And thanks for listening to Culture Click.